Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 159 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined by my co-host, Steve, and we're going to recap a little bit of nerd news. We're going to begin with a spoiler-free talk on Black Widow, discuss the future of Marvel multi-movie contracts, a quick Deadpool update, and then we'll move over into tech news with the Pentagon canceling the Jedi contract, some updates to the recent ransomware attacks, and some robot and space news. A lot to get to. Let's get started.
Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
All right, and we're here in episode 159. I am still on my weird travels, and we're piecing this thing together.
That's to say the least.
So let's just jump right into it and get what we can here today. And let's start with Black Widow. I am still traveling. I was hoping I was going to be able to sneak away somewhere this weekend to see it. I did not. I didn't even have internet to try to pay for the premium thing on Disney Plus. So let's go with your spoiler-free results. And hey, was it worth watching? Was it worth the wait?
So I posted my first written review in a while, just because I really felt obligated for the Marvel movie. And honestly, like, save that $30, man. Like, I did not enjoy the movie. I didn't hate it. There were some good aspects of it. I just felt like the writing was lacking, the plot was lacking, and they just kind of wasted, you know, kind of like a big opportunity to really expand the Black Widow character. You know, you go in thinking it's going to be an origin story like everybody else's first solo movie is, and they do give you a little bit of history of the character, but the main plot takes place between Civil War and Infinity War. So really, the Marvel Universe doesn't progress at all. You actually don't really gain that much information that you didn't really already know about the character. They added a few characters, you know, Florence Pugh. You get a little bit of extra with it. You know, Taskmaster was a great villain, but it just, like, I found myself almost nodding off during the movie. I just couldn't get into it. It was just not. It didn't grip you at all.
Well, it's disappointing to hear. I mean, read your review, and you know, for anybody who hasn't, you can go check that out over at thenerdcantina.com, or just join our Facebook group. You see Steve posted it there. But yeah, it's disappointing, especially because, you know, this is what everybody's been waiting for, to restart the MCU movie slate. You know, at least we've gotten some good Disney Plus shows, but I don't know. I guess my expectations were that this was still going to be an entertaining movie, although not deeply tied into, like, the future of MCU.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't upset leaving the movie. I was more sad and, like, a little disappointed just because Scarlet Witch is, or, God damn it, why do I keep doing that? Scarlett Johansson really worked her ass off for this role over a decade, you know what I mean? And finally was rewarded for her hard work, and they kind of just, if you know, slapped this movie together to give her due. Like, and I mean, I guess slapping the movie together is a little disingenuous. Like, I mean, the special effects, the fighting, coordinating, like, all of that was pretty on par. I mean, it was no Winter Soldier, it was no Civil War. The plot really didn't get you hooked. And they could have done, you know, her actual backstory of showing her being like this badass villain, and then what made her change her mind, what brought her to Fury. Like, they could have did that in a more extended kind of storyline, but instead they hurried it up, they quickly glossed over it. They didn't really show you her as a major villain, you know, so, like, Disney wanted to keep her, like, superhero image intact. They didn't want to, like, tarnish the 10 years of history, which I guess I get, but, I mean, I'm not a fucking child, man. I can do both. Like you can give me both. I can process this information, you know. But I guess they don't worry about guys like us anymore, and they're trying to appeal to a different market. And yeah, for me, it just didn't hit home. And I'm not the only one. After I posted my review, you can see a lot in the comment section that a lot of people agreed with the same thing. It just didn't really grab your attention.
Well. Again, unfortunate for the MCU. You know, I guess, you know, all the speculation when you heard there was going to be Black Widow, everybody was hoping it was going to be, you know, go back to Russian spy, the Budapest stories, all the things that were in the sketchy past of her. And yeah, unfortunately, we don't get that aspect of the character.
It was interesting that the numbers that came out of it, you know, it did, what, 80 million at the box office, 60 million on streaming. Like,
yeah,
that's a lot of people paying the $30 premium, man. Like, and with those numbers, that's not going to stop streaming anytime soon.
No, it's not. And maybe it actually encourages HBO Max and everybody else to go to the premium streaming, right? Like Disney Plus is already a service on its own, but then they've got the premium within the service, you know, HBO Max and stuff like that, where right now, if they do the simultaneous releases, they do it as it's just a part of the subscription. Maybe they go with the premium inside the subscription, same as Disney Plus, and say, well, why are we missing out on the $70 million opening on our streaming service? Obviously, people are willing to pay for that.
Yeah, if you were counting on seeing Dune with your HBO Max subscription, Black Widow might have
question
fucked
you.
Yeah, Black Widow might have fucked you.
But we can keep in a little bit of Marvel news here. And, you know, Kevin Feige this last week, he came out and said that, you know, Marvel is done making big multi-movie contracts with their actors. And instead, they're just going to elect with individual contracts per movie and just prioritizing actors that are excited to be a part of something greater than one movie. And they kind of informally commit to reprising their characters in the future.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to work out well.
I don't know who it doesn't work out well for, though. Like, who has the upper hand here? You know what I mean? Like, Samuel Jackson had a 9-movie deal with Marvel. You got, you know, Robert Downey had however many movies he had in it. You know, they sign up for a certain amount of movies generally. And, like, that's how you get somebody like Robert Downey Jr. That's how you get somebody like that to anchor into this thing. I don't know who this benefits. Does this benefit the actors? Does this give them more negotiating power to just keep scaling up how much money they make? I mean, Robert Downey, yeah, after his initial contract ended, he was, you know, extorting them for, you know, box office money on top of everything else.
The only person
his contract
has worked out for was Don Cheadle. Right? Like, that we're going to run into those situations more. You know, because it's not even going to necessarily be the actor's fault. They all have agents, man. Like, and it's their job to squeeze all the juice out of Disney that they possibly can.
And they have to be willing to walk away in order to do that. And, like, yeah, it's just said, I don't know who this benefits. Does this benefit Marvel and give them greater flexibility? Or does this actually benefit the actors? This is a decision that the actors are saying, like, sure, let's do this. Because I'll go in my initial audition and I'll tell them how excited I am to do 100 movies with Marvel. But after two and I become a wildly popular character, well, you know, and my price just went up.
Well, that's the thing. When massive fame hits a lot of these actors, who's to say their attitude doesn't change? You know what I mean? Like, can you imagine if you know, Robert Downey quit after the first Avengers movie or the second, you know, Iron Man? What would have happened to the MCU? Like, there's certain characters, yeah, you could throw in a Cheadle. It's not a big deal. Okay, cool.
Yeah, same thing like Chris Evans, right? Like, you weren't replacing Chris Evans.
Yeah, you know, so you get a Chris Evans agent who's a dickhead. The actor might lose, Marvel might lose, you know. But if in the end, I think that the biggest people at risk here are the fans.
Yeah, I'm concerned as far as what this actually means. Like I said, I really don't understand necessarily the reasoning behind this. I guess if I was Marvel, I would still want to do this. Maybe I loosen up these contracts so I'm not completely married to somebody that I have to get them five movies. And then, you know, if we change our plan, all of a sudden now I owe them a movie, right? You know, maybe there's a way to word it in the contract that still gives you multi-movie deals, but doesn't handcuff you to where like, okay, shit, now I have to make another Hulk. Nobody wants to see Professor Hulk, but I have to do it because I signed him up for it. You know what I mean? Like maybe that gives them flexibility in their storytelling, but I really think this has big potential to blow up in their face. Like, I don't know. Who do you really trust all of the prima donna actors to not walk away and not demand more money?
I just think some egghead sits at night and thinks about the amount of money they had to cut Robert Downey for Endgame, and they're just salty.
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that being a driving factor in this decision here.
You know what? We'll see how it goes. Like I said, the only people I'm really concerned about are the fans. And I just, you know, one of the stories that we're going to talk about on this podcast, if it ever happens, you know, anybody holds out, we're going to be talking about it. And when that situation happens, the only people really, I think, that are in jeopardy are the fans of these films.
Yeah. And, you know, and we'll throw it right back to this conversation here. And we'll say, like, this is off of the heels of the decision of really Kevin Feige, who I think, you know, maybe it's a smart business decision, maybe it's just arrogance of him just saying, like, who the hell doesn't want to be in the MCU? Like, whoever we offer a movie to is taking it. And if we offer them another one, they're going to take that too. So, you know, I think it's really coming off of a little bit of arrogance, just him saying, well, MCU is the show. Everybody wants to be a part of it. And I don't need to give somebody a multi-movie deal, because if I ask them to come back for a second, they're going to come back for a second. If I ask them to come back for a cameo, they're going to do it. And I think I think there's a bit of arrogance in this that drives this decision.
Yeah, they're just playing on the fact that these actors won't want to disappoint their fans. You know, comment sections would be lit.
And the truth is, for the most part, people always blame the actors. They don't blame the studio when there's holdouts, when there's, you know, the people blame the greedy actors. They don't always blame the studio. So most of the bad PR would probably fall on the actors who choose not to come back.
Yeah, every time Marvel's going to draw the line in the sand, right? You know, Marvel's going to give the ultimatum, and it's going to be the actor's choice. So, yeah, everything, although blowback's mostly going to fall on them.
But, you know, we're all Marvel today in our entertainment section, but we can just give another quick movie update for Marvel. And this is also with Kevin Feige confirming that Deadpool 3 is going to happen. It is going to fall within the MCU. It'll also be an R-rated movie. And that Ryan Reynolds is personally overseeing the script creation, that it's not going to take place. They're not going to start filming it this year, but they're targeting for next year. And Ryan Reynolds is deeply involved in the process.
All good news.
Yeah. I think this is exactly what everybody was hoping Deadpool would be, that it'll tie in. It'll still be rated R. It'll still be Ryan Reynolds doing Ryan Reynolds things with the character. And then, you know, we'll see how it, I doubt it deeply ties into the MCU. Yeah, I really think it's just going to, you know, maybe steal a couple cameos. It'll mention things that take place. But I don't think they're going to let a rated R movie really drive the storyline towards, like, all the kids who watch have no idea what's going on when they see the next MCU movie that mom and dad are willing to let them go see.
I don't know. I think it'd be a funny bit to bring him into the MCU. And anytime he's in a not Deadpool movie, they bleep him. And
they just censor him, yeah.
And because he breaks the fourth wall, it could be a really funny gag where he looks at the camera and is just like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? I think you could work it in and have the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I think you could definitely work him still in. But like I said, I just think, you know, you're not going to, in a Deadpool movie, get the next main villain or the next main, you know, driver of the overall MCU phase 4 plan. Because there's a certain population that are going to miss it. And I think it's going to be kind of, they're going to be hopefully good movies, but I think they're largely going to be standalone.
Yeah, if I don't see Mr. Sinister, I'm going apeshit. Like, I'm going fucking apeshit.
We'll see. I don't know how it's going to work out. Hopefully they just do all the same stuff. Let Ryan Reynolds promote the movie however he wants with all the crazy nonsense that he does during Deadpool movie season. You know, just let him go nuts.
Yeah, before we jump out of entertainment, I know it's not on the outline, but we can break up the Marvel news with the Nintendo Switch announcement. Did you see any of that?
Oh, I saw that there's one.
Yeah, we could gloss over real quick on how underwhelming that was. Basically, you get a Nintendo Switch with a better screen and fuck you. That's it. Like, they got a little bit bigger of a hard drive internally, I guess. It's like 40 gigs or something like that. So you don't need a big ass SD card right off the bat. But many fans like are just like, why even do this if you're not going to make it 4K when it's docked, no Bluetooth speakers, no, like really, they didn't, like, they just put a better iPad in the middle of it, like, and then it's like, okay, we're going to charge you an extra, like, what, $50, $75?
Yeah, I don't know who, I mean, people are going to buy it, but I think it's definitely falls short of what expectations people had for what was supposed to be the Nintendo Switch Pro.
Yeah, if you don't own a Switch, you're like, oh, okay, cool, good news. Like, I'll pay you the extra $50 for you know, a really nice screen on the handheld. But if you're an existing Switch owner, there is, like, nothing really pushing you to buy another one. Like, yeah, this, it was really weird that they went this route, but this is kind of what Nintendo does, right?
Yeah, the good thing for Nintendo is I don't think they care.
No, they don't.
Right? Like, they don't care about the big announcements. They don't care about all the stuff. They're going to give somebody a Zelda title every couple of years. They're going to give you Mario a couple of years. Yeah, apparently, I want to buy this Mario Golf.
This
Mario
underwhelming Golf system, and then they're just like, "Hey, look over there, Mario Golf." And you're just like, ooh.
And I want it. And
like, I already bought it.
So, yeah, like, Nintendo doesn't care. While PlayStation and Xbox are fighting each other for state-of-the-art technology and the best-of-the-world graphics and, you know, the greatest story playing and everything else, like, Nintendo's just like, man, we're just going to slightly update some 1980s shit, and you guys are going to love it. And they're not wrong.
They're not wrong. They release Mario Golf and announce another Zelda game, and everyone's just like, okay. Like, all right.
Yeah, but if Xbox updated, you know, came up with an entirely new console, entirely new update, and the only thing that updated was just one minor feature, everybody would lose their shit. Like, everybody would lose it on
for
Microsoft
sure.
Stock would tank 10%. It would be a problem. But
now, Nintendo gets the pass, man. They get a pass.
And then just because, you know, we're running a little long on entertainment, you mentioned video game news that wasn't on our schedule for today. Also, some video game news that wasn't on our schedule today is I'm just going to encourage people to go over to the Nerd Cantina community and go check out Sean, our buddy over there, Sean Mullen, the occasional co-host. He came out and put it up some good information about the state of play that happened from PlayStation, announcing some major game updates coming out. Yeah, he gave a pretty good breakdown on a lot of these games, things that I will never play and can't speak intelligently on. But I will say, go check those out, and can also see some of the posts about WitcherCon out there and the updates to the Witcher franchise and the Witcher show coming out. As far as we got release dates, we got some updated information there, as well as video game news.
Yeah, we can't fit everything into the show every week, so the community is actually a really good place to see all the other stuff. I mean, we did get the What If trailer posted up there. A lot of cool things that, when we can't condense it all into our outline, most of it gets shared in the group. So that's the theme, guys. Join the Facebook group.
Yeah. And there was a slight slowdown in the family memes from Fast and Furious. So if you were getting tired of those, it went down about 50% this week.
Yeah, it's dying.
Yeah, came and went. All right, let's move into some tech news. Let's roll through. We've got first couple stories here, just really updates to things we've talked about a couple different times. First one being the Jedi contract, the Pentagon cloud computing contract that was originally won by Microsoft as it was up in the air. Then Trump made some statements and tweets against Bezos, and lo and behold, it was given to Microsoft. Amazon's been fighting against that decision since, saying that there was some unfairness in that selection process. And it's a $10 billion contract over 10 years. Pretty big deal. And not to mention, you've got to assume whoever gets this contract is going to be on for more than 10 years. Like, this cloud computing is not going to go away. The Department of Defense is going to need this forever.
I just think this is funny, just because with the bickering that, you know, how many times we did this story with Amazon and Microsoft going back, it feels like the government was taking Amazon and Microsoft on a trip to Disney World, and then it's halfway through the trip, they're fighting so much, you know, the government's just like, fuck it, fuck it, we're not going, fuck it, we're going home, I hope you're fucking happy, like, it just feels like they're just like, I'm done, it was getting drug out in court, like, yeah, I just, one of you just couldn't be fucking happy, you just couldn't be fucking happy, and shut the fuck up, fine, we're going home.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, that's what happens this week. The entire Jedi contract gets canceled. Nobody has a contract right now. They're completely canceling it. They are restructuring a new contract. They're claiming that they canceled it not because of any of the legal issues, not because of the contention between the two, but because the need for cloud computing in the last year and a half since this initial contract was drafted has changed. That cloud computing has changed. Security requirements have changed. So they needed to rewrite a new contract.
Somebody at the Pentagon bought a stadium changes. And was like, fuck this.
Yeah. And so they're opening it up again for new people to compete. But it's also been stated by the DoD that the only two people that have cloud services that could in any way meet their needs is Microsoft and Amazon. There are no other people to compete. They're going to look at whether there's outside options, but we all know there is nobody that is at the scale needed for the entire Department of Defense than Amazon and Microsoft. So it's going to be, once again, the two of them competing for a contract that is very similar to the original contract, and we're starting this process over again.
What this really scares me about is like the just like oversight in government spending, right? Like, they could just cancel this program. How bad did they really need the program? And how easy is it for them to just spend $10 billion fucking dollars?
Yeah, I mean, it's a $1 billion per year deal. And that's a drop in the bucket in the Department of Defense spending. Like, that's nothing. It sounds like a lot of money. But it really is insignificant when you're talking about Department of Defense spending on an annual basis. So, I've actually thought that this was a pretty cheap contract, considering the fact that like cloud computing, access to data in a secure way, and you're talking about like, you know, the highest level of security in the world way across the world is one of the most essential things to the military today. And the fact that they're only going to do it for $1 billion a year, I thought this was a home run deal for Department of Defense monetarily. And, it just, what it shows is that this is something that is clearly needed. It is something really being asked for by the Department of Defense. And we're just going to shut it down over some bickering and restart this process, which we know means that it's not going to be delivered for another couple of years.
Yeah, I don't, you know.
This is why like China and stuff is closing that gap so fast in military power and will surpass. Because
while
we're bickering this stuff, they turned on cloud computing a week after they decided they needed it.
Yeah.
Right? You're like, they said we need it. They created it. It was over in, you know, a week to start, 6 months to perfect.
Yeah.
It's taking us 2 years to sign the contract that will take 2 years to fulfill.
Yeah, we are always slow rolling in all these things. That is one of the downsides of our democracy, is that we never progress, because in the process of, you know, our own regime changes, that you get one president does something, another president rolls it back and tries to do their own thing. Like, we literally take two steps forward and then two steps back. We just stay stuck in the one position, because we are constantly just back and forth. And meanwhile, the rest of the world just blows past us in a really important situation, because we can't just get our shit together and get on the same page on anything in this country anymore. You know, and in tech and things like that, you would think would be the things that we could kind of agree on, you know, especially when it comes to defense and stuff. Like, you would think that, you know, these things would be kind of like easily worked out. We have big issues in this country that aren't so easily worked out. And I understand that process, you know, like, I get that.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate part of how, yeah, there, everything is political, everything is partisan in when it requires government interaction, and you would hope some things aren't, that some things have priority over kind of partisan politics. That is not proving true in most cases. All right, and then our next big story in tech is another update. It's coming out of that hack we talked about last week from a company I still don't know how to pronounce. Was it Cassier? I don't know. But it was the big hack that locked millions of different devices. It was started with a security firm that got spread to a software firm that got spread to another software firm that ended up hitting hundreds of clients and millions of devices. And this last week, it's been announced that that massive ransomware attack, which was attributed to the Revel hacker group known to be from Russia. Although, you know, even like the presidential administration says, oh, well, we still don't know who it came from, where it came from. But most security experts have credited to him. And there's another hint here that's come out this week on who it really belongs to. And that's that this code was specifically written that the ransomware would only infect and attack computers that did not use Russian or Russian-like languages, like, you know, what they speak in Tajik and Belarusian and Ukrainian. So any like Baltic type country or Russian, if that language was the native language on that computer, then it didn't attack it. It's kind of like, oh, okay, well, are we really questioning where this came from then? When it's
the funny thing is Putin would still deny it. He'll still deny it.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure.
Like, he won't care.
And he's going to deny that it came from his government, which I guess you still can't necessarily credit it back to him personally. But now it's almost impossible like to deny that it didn't come from a Russian-based company, a Russian-based, you know, a hacking group. And this just comes down to the fact that he still doesn't care. Like, he'll just say like, okay, well, it's not my Russian-based hacking group, and it's your guys' job to protect yourself. I'm not going to go out and find these people for you. But it's clearly
known. We're not going to find the memo that he wrote to authorize this shit. You know, like, he's always going to have that kind of deniability.
And you have to assume that they have all the tools necessary to go find these people, because that's why they write this code that can't infect any Russian computers, because they don't want to get tied up or piss off the wrong people in their country by having them get rolled up in a hack like this. So it's just easier for them to say, hey, we're like, the best security thing that you could probably do in your computer right now is just change your native language to Russian, and then you're safe.
Yeah.
If you're a business, it's probably the safest thing you can do right now, because they don't want to accidentally piss off local authorities, piss off their own, you know, Russian countries or countries that are sympathetic. Because again, it's not just Russian countries. It was pretty much any country that shows good ties to the Kremlin. Their language was excluded on the list. So it's an interesting, you know, kind of hint. Apparently this was also known about the Colonial Pipeline hack. Something we didn't talk about at the time. It wasn't publicly released, but with the announcement of this, we're also finding out that Colonial Pipeline hack, which was accredited to DarkSci, which is also considered operating out of Russia, but they're more of like a corporate ransomware company, but they also had similar procedures built in there that it wouldn't affect any Russian based computers. So again, you know, Russia probably is prosecuting cyber criminals in a much more strict way, where they don't even want to mess around over there, but everybody's okay messing around over here.
Yeah, it's just so messed up that one, this is something you can even do. You know what I mean? Like that you could have viruses that have, you know, exemptions in them. And like the fact that they really don't care then if you know where it's coming from, like, you know, cause the minute you find this code, like, yeah, it's obvious who's doing this, you know, like China's over there going, I told you, like, it wasn't me. Like, I told you.
Yeah. They said it's a scary concept. It doesn't really change anything about it. This was still the largest hack, affected the most, you know, individual devices of any machine. But you know, we get greater attribution now to Russia, and I have a better understanding on kind of their tactics and what they're doing. Does it protect us in the future? No, probably not. Like, they still need, we've got a long way to go before we can better improve our infrastructure, better improve our corporations, and create like actual security standards for every company that holds personal data and everything else to prevent them from being victims to ransomware or hacks.
Yeah,
but it's an interesting story at the least.
Yeah, it's fucked up. This next one really pisses me off.
This next one is fascinating. I love this next one. So let's.
This is so fucked up.
Oh no, it's 100% fucked up. But it's also, well, let's get into it on why I think it's so elegant. And here we go. This is about robot talk here, and apparently within the Amazon system there is just automated robots firing human beings from their jobs. And to give some context on what this the story is talking about is for the drivers, especially the flex drivers, people who sign up, it's kind of an Uber system through Amazon or wherever else you sign up for flex hours to do kind of delivery on demand. These flex drivers are being fired by automated email responses based off of their performance in driving. So you've got they're trying to put some heartfelt stories in here about some 63-year-old veteran who was driving, had been driving for years with the company, and all of a sudden he finished his route one day and he gets an email from an automated system that just says, your services are no longer required. You are terminated from your position.
Go home, Doug. We don't need you.
So, this is obviously going to anger a lot of people like you. So let's hear it. And I'll tell you why I think this is awesome.
Like, so one, you're taking any kind of human contact out of this. So there is no kind of like, it feels just so cold hearted and cutthroat. You know, if the minute it's all just based on data. So if your data doesn't hit the right buttons, you just get an automated email telling you not to come into work anymore. So there's no situation where you can explain to your manager situations, you know, like they put these arbitrary deadlines on these delivery guys in fulfillment centers. And, you know, they never take into consideration, like, I got caught by a train. I fucking, you know what I'm saying? Like, I rang the doorbell. Nobody was there. Like, the doorman wasn't at the door, couldn't let me in. Like, there are numbers of situations that can take a delivery from an 8-minute delivery to a 12-minute delivery, right? Like, and in the grand scheme of things, you know, we're talking 4 minutes of a delivery, you know, but Amazon doesn't look at shit like that. Amazon looks at it as like, if that's 4 minutes for one delivery, you quantify that by the millions of deliveries we do, we have potential to lose X amount of fucking millions of dollars, and we're not going to tolerate that shit. So if you get caught by a train, figure it the fuck out, you know. And like, this is why motherfuckers are shitting in bags and shit. Like this is fucked up.
Yeah, so there's an aspect of that is screwed up, and I think, you know, these kind of things are bound to screw over some people that did not deserve to get fired. But the reason why I say it's oddly kind of like elegant in the sense that the algorithm gives zero fucks. It's just going to say everybody else is performing at this pace. You performed below it. You're on the chopping block. You're the one to go. Everybody else is performing this same route or similar routes, and they're able to do it in an hour and a half.
Shouldn't your company give one fuck? Shouldn't it give at least one fuck?
But the elegance of it is that there's no discrimination suits in this, right? Nobody's suing for unlawful termination based off a discrimination claim or based off, like, it's a tough world in human resources to fire people and to fire people for cause, because that cause can be challenged or whatever else. In this world,
yeah, you can't say, like, I got fired because I'm a woman, like, or I got fired because I'm disabled, or I got fired. Like, yeah, there's a certain level of
chicken shit beauty in this that they don't have to, that they don't have to worry about any of that anymore. Like, they don't have to. They can just say, like, no, we have very key metrics that we evaluate all of our drivers, all of our employees based off of, and the people in the bottom 10% every month get fired, and we hire a new 10%. And we have hundreds of thousands of applicants out there. So we can always replace them. So we're just constantly trimming the bottom 10% or bottom 5%, and we're getting in the next top 5%. And the bottom 5 or 10% are clearly distinguished through key metrics that we track that are driven by this algorithm. And we have no say so. We don't even look at the names who's getting fired. We just look at it as pure statistics. So nobody can say, oh, they fired me because of my race, because of my gender, because of anything else, because of my age. No, because we're not even looking at it. There's no human beings looking at who you are. We're just looking at your performance, or the computer's looking at your performance. We just say, sure, fire them.
I would more like it if the bot put you on a 1 week suspension so you can be reviewed by a human.
Yeah, but then that human who reviews you that chooses not to give you a second chance, that is lawsuit bait.
Yeah, but they could do it. They could do it not face to face. They can do it with the employee number and the employee information blacked out on a computer screen. You know what I'm saying? And just review it in an office somewhere and say, okay, this is this. You have like an opportunity to respond to the email and give your case. You know, like yeah, you could do it totally anonymously. Like there's a way to have both, right? To eliminate the discrimination kind of like cases, because like I get it.
And yeah, I don't know if we don't
get a bunch
know
of
that.
Shitty employees that get fired and then they say, oh, you only fired me because I'm black, or you only fired me because I'm a woman, or you only fired me like, and they're tired of having that said to them a million fucking times. So they came up with this system. I get, okay, all right, I'll play along. I get that. Well, it like, Make it a process then, so that bot sends you email. You have 3 days to respond with why you should keep your job. That's reviewed, quantified with the data by another third party with all pertinent information blacked out. I don't even know your name. I just see this the data, and then I make a call, you know, fire or keep, and then I click a button, and then you get a second email that says, nope, we'll give you a second chance, or fuck you, stay home, we don't need you. Like, there's a way to do both, right?
Yeah, so, and there appears to be, even in this article, it talks about there is an appeal process and an arbitration process that they can elect to go through.
But
they have to pay $200. They have to pay $200 to appeal their case. And most don't pay that amount. Most just accept their fate and accept getting fired. Could Amazon be better to their workers? Absolutely. Like, I think we all know this, right?
I don't know if we can make a case that they could be much worse to their workers.
But what I'm saying is, if you're the biggest country in the world, or biggest company in the world, and you have, you know, I think this article talks about how there's like still 600,000 applicants to be flex drivers. You have no shortage of people. Like, it's not like you're having a hard time finding replacements. Then, like, I don't know what. Yeah, in a perfect world, you get to care about every human being in your organization. Or you could just protect your organization and just do what makes analytical sense. And if it fires a couple of the wrong people, you're going to get some bad articles like this. That's bad press for Amazon. And you want to know what? I'm still going to go buy something off Amazon Prime tomorrow. Like, it's not a big deal. It doesn't hurt their bottom line, but it protects them from litigation. It protects them from, and it also allows them to quickly fire the people who are underperforming, which is hard to do in a big corporation. To fire anybody is hard. Yeah, take the human element out of it. Like I said, it's chicken shit.
It just feels real cold blooded.
Yeah, it's ugly, but it makes perfect sense in my opinion.
Yeah, it just feels real dastardly. Like it. Yeah, I don't know, because you know there's going to be collateral damage, and those are the people you feel bad for, right? Like, I mean, it may be a small number of cases, maybe a big number of cases, but either way, like, you're talking about people's livelihood. There's towns in America where this is the only job they can get that'll get them by, you know, and I don't know, man. It doesn't sit right with me.
I could see that. I do kind of like it. I don't know why, but I just find it fascinating. All right, let's move on to our last little segment here and talk a little bit about some space. And Richard Branson, first billionaire in space, it's done.
Yeah, we talked about how much we love the Petty. And did you watch when he landed? Did you see any of like the footage of his interviews and stuff when he landed?
I didn't see it. I read some articles, but I didn't see the footage.
I mean,
itself.
He did like everything short of saying, you know, fuck you, Bezos. Like, it was just like shit-eating grin from ear to ear. Like, granted, he just got back from space, and I'm sure that was pretty cool, so he was all hyped up. But like, you know, had no qualms of saying first CEO in space, and like, I got my astronaut wings and this and that. Like, it was like, man, it's just too funny. Like dude literally was just like, your name is not going to go down in history like this. Like, fuck you. Honestly though, Branson has been trying to do this shit for decades.
Oh yeah. for way longer than Bezos or Elon. Yeah,
he was the first one talking about I want to go to space, you know. So Bezos and Elon were really the, you know, coming behind Branson, and when they got their money, technology had just already ramped up so fast that they were able to kind of speedball through their shit.
I don't think Branson ever thought that reusable rocket technology would move along this fast. So he thought his way of safe, reliable, and kind of a less costly way of getting to space was the 747, like traditional flight model. I don't think anybody predicted that all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Elon was going to solve all the problems on reusable rockets, how to recover them, how to do that in such a short period of time.
Yeah. I mean, he had a good idea. It was practical. It was everything that we needed for commercial space travel. And Elon just came in and was like, I got a better widget. Just shit all over it, but good for him. Like, I mean, to see him on stage, like he's getting old. I don't understand how he didn't break a hip or something in those G's. but he made it up there. He was super pumped. He was happy about it. Good for him. After this last story, fuck you, Bezos. Anyways, I'm all for it.
I read somewhere, I don't remember what the article was, that talked about like Elon called Richard Branson at like 4 o'clock in the morning to wish him well or whatever else. And supposedly like Elon's been told he's got a seat on the next one. We'll see if that's a real thing.
That'd be kind of cool. You know,
it would be only because it furthers the conflict between like him and Bezos. I hope he's picking sides and I hope he goes Branson.
Yeah. If he ain't Lex Luthor yet, we pushing him. We're pushing them.
All right. And then we've got one last story here. The NASA's attempting some risky fix against the Hubble telescope. Hubble telescope, we've gotten more than our money's worth out of Hubble since the mid 1970s.
Yeah.
But you're going to continue to try to do some repairs. This next repair, it's going to be a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah. Amazes me that this thing is actually still up and running. Like, find something at a garage sale from 1974. You know what I'm saying? and plug it into a wall. See how well it works. You know, and see how easy it is to fix. It's amazing that this thing is going on 50 fucking years of you know, space travel and data recovery. And it just blows my mind that, one, they're not even ready to scrap it. You know what I'm saying? Like, can we not shoot something up to replace it at this point? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, can we not?
Yeah, you would think so. But I mean, it's still producing. It's still doing well.
NASA's taking the "if it ain't broke, you know, don't fix it" kind of thing. Like, they're trying to salvage every bit of this fucking thing, and I just don't understand. Like, yeah, I get it. Hubble's been a big name in space. You know what I mean? You say the word Hubble, everybody kind of knows what you're talking about, right? Like, it's been famous for those 50 years for all the things they found using it and all the data that it has recovered. But I mean, at some point, you got to put the family dog down, right?
Not yet.
You got to put the family dog down, bro. I get it. It's sad, you know, but it's got to happen.
Yeah, you'd think so, but in this one, I think, from my understanding of it, it's lost communication. It had a malfunction that's caused it to shut down in essentially safe mode. And now they're going to have to go in and do some actual kind of hardware and software replacement of like 1970s level computer equipment. And it may never be recovered after this. There's a chance that it fails catastrophically, and if so, then Hubble's going to be,
and that's what I mean,
left out there as a space museum.
All the effort and money we're spending to try to fix it, like, can't we just throw that at Hubble 2, you know, Wubble, whatever you want to call it, just call it a loss, man, and take all the money and the effort that we'd be taking to fix this thing and put it towards the next one. That is going to be
the next one would be years down the road. So
really, this thing's been in space for 50 years. We don't have a backup. Like we didn't have, and if that's the case, then we don't deserve the data for the 2 years and make something and throw it out there. Like at some point in the 90s or, 2000s, someone should have been like, hey man, that satellite up there is getting pretty old. We might want to, start on version 2 sometime soon.
Yeah. I get that. But right now, if they can just cause it to switch to its backup computer systems, which is all they're really trying to do is have it switch to its backup computer systems and then reboot. If they can get that to work, then it's back. It's on board. I don't think it's not like they're going out there replacing major components out of it or whatever else. They're trying to switch from one computer system to another that's still internal to it. Give it a shot. And then if that fails, yeah, hopefully quickly get a replacement out there.
We're trying to fix a computer system that was built in 1974.
You're not wrong.
Like my iPhone is more powerful than that satellite. Yeah. Let's.
I think Hubble shows us why we deserve right to repair rights.
let's just do better. Yeah, that's a story we didn't talk about. Ajit Pai's failures. Yeah.
We'll talk about right to repair because there is some news in right to repair that actually came out this week. We'll add it to next week. But I think that's it. That's all we've got for this week. We got to get out of here.
Yeah. Always a pleasure. Good to have my brother back. Good to be back in the swing of things. We're gonna keep it going for you.
All right. Well, as always, thanks for listening. Join us over at the community. Join us some conversations. Get some additional news over there. Some wild memes and. You can find us at thenerdcantina.com/community. Hopefully see you there. And until next week, talk to you later.
See ya.